Thank you, Dwight, for leading us in those songs. I doubt that there are many here who have not received a visit in the hospital or in their home or an encouraging phone call from Dwight. This past week, I was not able to make as many of the rounds as possible, but Dwight's like the mailman, neither rain nor snow nor gloom of night. He's always there, and I know that this congregation, I know I do, certainly appreciates Dwight and all that he does. Open your Bibles this morning, if you will, to the book of Exodus chapter 20. And we're going to begin today with a test. And so I want you to get ready, and I'll give you a short test. It's a yes or no test. And it's what I call my contentment test. All you need to do is keep up with the number of yeses that you answer on this. If you answer no, don't worry about that. Just count the number of yeses that you answer on this test. Okay, question number one. Are you ready? Keep your eyes on your own papers. Are you satisfied with your home in its present state? Number two. Are you happy with the furniture you have in your house? Number three, are you happy with your wardrobe? Yep. Good. There's one yes. Number four, are you content with your, this is for you married folks, are you content with your mate as he or she is now? Are you happy with the car you drive? And then lastly, do you have enough money? All right. Now, anyone that was able to answer yes to every one of those questions, you can go ahead and leave right now. You don't need this sermon. The reason for this little test is that contentment and the ability to say yes to those kinds of questions, the ability to be content, is the antidote for the sin that's mentioned here in the 10th commandment. It's the sin of covetousness. Read with me, if you will, again that verse. God gets real specific here on this commandment. He doesn't just say, don't covet. He spells it out in great detail. You shall not covet your neighbor's house. You shall not covet your neighbor's wife or his manservant or maidservant, his ox or donkey, or anything that belongs to your neighbor. This is the commandment that gets us all. This is the commandment that got the Apostle Paul. He had said that he had lived in all good conscience keeping the law, but in Romans chapter 7, he says, when I read this commandment about coveting, it brought about all kinds of covetous desires in my heart. This commandment is different from all of the other nine. It moves from the external world of activities to the inner world of our thoughts and our motives. It's interesting because there are many ancient law codes, and many of them have close parallels to these commandments given by Moses. In most ancient law codes, there are prohibitions against murder and against theft and even against adultery, but not in even one of those ancient law codes is there ever a law against coveting. Did you know that among modern nations, there's no nation that has on its law code that you can't covet? Only the law of God says, thou shalt not covet. It deals with the internal, with the inside. Covetousness is not a word that we use very often. And so let's define it. First of all, covet means to desire that which you have no right to possess. Achan, after the Israelites had entered into the promised land and they were handed Jericho as the walls fell down, God said, that is to be dedicated to me. Don't take any of the plunder of that city. But Achan saw some things within that city that he just had to have. And so under cover of darkness, he snuck in and he took those things. He coveted the things that God had said belonged to me. He had no right to it. He took it and he lost his life consequently. David stood on the roof of his palace and he looked down and he saw a beautiful woman bathing. And he found out that she was a married woman. She belonged to one of his soldiers. But David said, I want her anyway. David desired that which he had no right to. Covet carries a stronger meaning than just wanting something. It means to crave after that thing, or to lust for it, or to burn with desire for it. And it can even carry the idea that I wish I had it and he didn't. In modern translations, the Greek word for covet is often translated greed or dishonest gain. And you can covet all kinds of materials, thus God's enumeration of these things that you should not covet. You can covet material things. You can see your neighbor's home or your neighbor's furnishings or the ski boat or their flat screen television or their jewelry or their clothing and all the things that we can possess. And you can look at those things and say, how come they get to have that and I don't? And you can burn with desire and let yourself be eaten up with greed over these things that you don't possess. That's why Jesus said what he did in Luke chapter 12 and verse 15. Watch out, he said, be on your guard against all kinds of greed. A man's life does not consist in the abundance of his possessions. The wise man had said many years earlier in Proverbs 21:26, describing one who is covetous, he says, all day long he craves for more. And then he contrasts that with the righteous, but the righteous give without sparing. Now in the Proverbs, he describes one man who is grasping and one man who is giving. Well, you can covet more than possessions. You can covet status or honor or position or popularity. Jesus described those religious leaders of the first century who coveted their position. They coveted being given the best seat at the dinner party. They coveted the honor that would be given to them. And this is what Jesus says of them in Matthew 23. Everything they do is done for men to see. They make their phylacteries wide and their tassels long. They love the place of honor at banquets and the most important seats in the synagogue. They love to be greeted in the marketplace and to have men call them rabbi. They love this kind of honor. That's covetousness, to long for honor and to seek honor for ourselves. Jesus says you can covet forbidden sexual relationships. You can covet another man's wife. Peter talks about this in 2 Peter 2 when he describes those who have eyes full of adultery. They never stop sinning. They seduce the unstable. They are experts in greed. That's that word covetousness. You may remember that classic story of one who was covetous. His name was Ahab, and his wife's name was Jezebel. And they had everything that money could buy except for that little plot of ground next door to Ahab's palace, the vineyard that was owned by Naboth. And Ahab thought, you know, if I could just have that plot of ground, I could make that into my summer garden, and I could have all the vegetables I wanted, and they could just be brought right into the palace fresh. And so he approached Naboth, and he said, I want to buy it. You name your price. But Naboth said, that's my family inheritance. That's come down to me from my forefathers. I could never let go of that ground. Based on sentimental reasons, he just couldn't sell it, even to the king. And Ahab was so upset. He so desired that land that he became sick. He went to bed. He was so envious, so covetous. And when Jezebel saw it, she said, that's ridiculous. A king wanting something that he can't have? She said, I'll take care of that. So she had a big banquet thrown. And while Naboth was at the banquet, she hired two liars and scoundrels to come in, and they made all kinds of false accusations against Naboth, and they took him outside the city wall, and they stoned him to death. And Jezebel walked in and said, "Guess what? Naboth just died. The vineyard is up for sale. You can have it." And Ahab took that which he had no right to. He was met by the prophet of God, and the prophet of God told him, "On the very spot where Ahab's blood was shed, the dogs are going to lick your blood, and furthermore, the dogs are going to eat Jezebel." And it happened, just as God prophesied. Now, there are two important lessons that we learn from that story of a king's covetousness. One is that covetousness blinds you to what you already have. I mean, he was a king. He had a palace. He had riches beyond anyone else in the land. And yet he was miserable and he was sick over one little plot of land that remained outside of his grasp. I think it's such a shame when we as Christians who are heirs of the King, who have heaven and all the riches of Christ waiting for us and the peace and the joy that we can experience as Christians in this life, when we're miserable because we can't have the car we want to drive or the dress we want to wear or the house we want to live in. In Ecclesiastes chapter 5, verse 10, it says, "Whoever loves money never has money enough. Whoever loves wealth is never satisfied with his income." And there's another thing about covetousness. Not only does it blind us to all that we already possess, it tempts us to treat our fellow man with contempt. Ahab allowed his wife to have Naboth murdered. And when our coveting results in jealousy, we often will say and do things to harm our fellow man that otherwise we would never even think of doing. Isn't it amazing that even kings, even the wealthiest of the wealthy, have a hard time learning contentment? Contentment is mentioned four times in the New Testament. It's mentioned each of those times in relationship with money and our attitude towards money. The first time contentment is mentioned, Jesus is talking to a group of Roman soldiers in Luke chapter 3, verse 14. And he tells those Roman soldiers, "Don't extort money and don't accuse people falsely. Be content with your pay." Later in Philippians chapter 4 and verse 11, Paul says, "Not that I speak in respect of want, for I've learned in whatever state I am, therein to be content." And then he talks again to young Timothy about this, and he says in 1 Timothy chapter 6, verse 6, "But godliness with contentment is great gain. For we brought nothing into the world, and we can take nothing out of it. But if we have food and clothing, we will be content with that. People who want to get rich fall into temptation and a trap and into many foolish and harmful desires that plunge men into ruin and destruction. For the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil." And then the fourth time that contentment's mentioned in the New Testament is in Hebrews 13:5. "For whoever wrote Hebrews said, 'Keep your lives free from the love of money and be content with what you have.'" You know, there is a difference between wanting to improve your situation, your lot in life, and covetousness. And let me say this clearly. It is not wrong to want to improve your lot in life. It is not wrong to want to be successful in your profession. It is not wrong to want to do a little bit better and to grow in that. And it is not wrong to be successful financially in this life. That's not what this commandment is teaching against. It's saying, do all that, but be open-handed. Don't be grasping. Don't be selfish. And there are people who are moving up in the world, but it's never fast enough, and they never have enough, and they are chronically unhappy at every point along the way because they don't quite have as much as the guy next to them. That's covetousness, and that's sinful. And I want to just make an appeal to each of us. I'm talking to myself too. We are constantly bombarded, especially this time of year. I got the Sunday paper and almost needed a forklift to bring it in off the driveway this morning because of all the ads. We've got Black Friday coming next week, and you're going to see even more ads coming and all the things that we could buy with Christmas coming. Don't fall into that trap. Don't overspend. Don't get yourself so deeply into debt that you can't help others when needs arise. Have some extra cash on hand always that you can use to bless the lives of others. I wish that we could all hang a little thing on our Christmas tree with that verse on it, a man's life does not consist in the abundance of his possessions, and remind ourselves that that's not what this season is about. Epicurus said, if you want to make a man happy, add not to his possessions, but take away from his desires. And I think that's the secret. Let's want less. Let's need less. There are things that I want. There are things I could be tempted with. But I'm grateful for some of the things that I'm not tempted with. A man from Kansas, so the story goes, a poor farmer went to New York City for the first time, and he saw all the sights and went through all the stores and came back home, and his neighbor said, well, what's New York City like? He said, well, he said, it's a big place, but I tell you, I am thankful to God that I didn't see anything there that I wanted. You know, we all have things that we're blessed by God that we don't want, but we all struggle with things that we do want. I am grateful that I live right here in this area, surrounded by lakes and some of the best fishing anywhere in the country. I have never in my life wanted a boat. I'm just not interested in that. Now, some of you really struggle with that. But I thank God, and I honestly do this, I thank God that that is one area that I don't have to battle with in my life. Now, there are some others I do, but that's one I don't. So we all have areas that we have our own personal struggles with. Now, I want to leave you just quickly with three ways to help overcome this spirit of covetousness, because I'm convinced in some way we all struggle with it. Number one, stop comparing yourself with other people. You learn early in life to keep up with the Joneses. The first time I'm aware in my life that this sin ever began to work on me was when I was just very young. I was maybe in high school, and we had some next door neighbors that lived beside us, and their house was bigger than our house, and that didn't really concern me. But there were twins, and they were a year younger than me. And the first year that Ford came out with the Mustang, their dad bought them a matching pair of Ford Mustangs. And that got me. I thought, why can't my dad get me a car? He gave me the family's old, used 61 Chevy. And that was to be my car to drive. And they parked those Mustangs right out there on the street beside the house, and I saw them, and I thought, wow, that would be wonderful. They made me envious. But one of those twins left for college, and the next year took his own life. It's been said, before we set our heart too much upon anything, let us examine how happy they are who possess it. And that story can be replicated among the rich and the famous, those who do have everything materially, and yet whose lives are miserable and lonely and unhappy and very often end at their own hands. For some, the ambition is to have bigger and better and newer than all those around us, but Paul talked about a better ambition for us as Christians. He said, make it your ambition to lead a quiet life, to mind your own business, to work with your hands, just as we told you, so that your daily life may win the respect of outsiders. It's not what you possess that causes people to respect you. It's the life you live. Secondly, we can count our blessings. We sang that song, talked about as we see the other people's lands and gold, we need to count our own blessings and what we have. The early Puritan saying goes like this, food and drink and Jesus, what more could a man want? And you know that's so true. If we have Jesus Christ in our lives, we can go through bankruptcy, we can go through terminal illness, we can go through whatever this life brings our way, and we can still be the most blessed people on the face of this earth. And then thirdly, we ought to get involved with those who are less fortunate than ourselves. If you don't know someone you can help this holiday season, then there are organizations here in this town that will help you find people to help. And they'll show you ways you can serve and the ways you can be blessings to others. And I just hope that we always will be people, especially us as Christians, will be people who are givers and not graspers and takers only. One thing that we've done here in times past is just learn those words as we're tempted to acquire more and more. Just say those little words, "I don't really need that." You know, just remember those words. "I don't really need that." And when you see something that you're tempted to have just for your own, just say that. "I don't really need that." We as humans have built-in desires, and we can't change that. But we can harness and direct our desires in a good way. Paul wrote in 1 Corinthians 12:31, "Eagerly desire the greater gifts." And he's not talking about the kind that go under a Christmas tree. He said in Psalm, the psalmist said in Psalm 42, 1 and 2, "As the deer pants for streams of water, so my soul pants for you, O God." You can redirect your desires and learn to want and desire the things that are healthy and right and good for us. Leo Tolstoy wrote many stories, but my favorite one by far of all of his is the story entitled, "How Much Land Does a Man Need?" And it's a story about a peasant in Russia, and his name is Pahom. And Pahom hears about this fertile land where the soil is black and rich and the grass is chest tall. And for a trifling amount of money, you can have all the land that you want as long as you can encompass it in a day's journey. And so he travels to this land, and he talks to the chieftain, and they said, "Yes, we'll start today up on this hilltop, and we're selling land in that direction. So as much land as you can encompass in a day's journey will be yours." And so he places his cap on top of the hill, and he puts his money that will secure that land there. And the chieftain and all the other men there are there, and this man had traveled with his servant, and he said, "Now you stay here and you cheer me on when I begin to get close." And so he starts out, and he sees beautiful lush land, and he sees beautiful countryside, and he wants more, and so he continues to make his circuit ever wider, and finally realizes that the day is nearly gone, and so he has to hurry as quickly as he can to get back up to the top of the hill before the day is over. And Tolstoy describes it like this. As he nears that hilltop, it says, "Pahom looked at the sun, which had reached the earth. One side of it had already disappeared. With all his remaining strength, he rushed on, bending his body forward so that his legs could hardly follow fast enough to keep him from falling. Just as he reached the hillock, it suddenly grew dark. He looked up. The sun had already set, and he gave out a cry, 'All my labor has been in vain.' He was about to stop when he heard his servant shouting and remembered that though to him from below the sun seemed to have set, up on the hillock they could still see the sun. So he took a long breath and he ran up that hill. It was still light there at the top. He reached the top. He saw the sun. He saw his cap. He uttered a cry as his legs fell beneath him, and he fell forward, and he reached out and touched the cap with his hand just as the sun set." But then the last paragraph says, "His servant picked up the spade and dug a grave long enough for Pahom to lie in. He buried him in it. 6 feet from his head to his heels was all the land that a man needs." Pahom's race is being run throughout the streets and avenues of our nation on a daily basis. In New York City, in San Francisco, right here in Springfield, Missouri, people who are spending their energies and their life hoping to acquire things that are ever bigger and ever brighter, who will in the end lose everything they have. Let's not be among those people. If this morning you need to respond to Jesus, who will give you everything you ever need or want or desire, he longs to give you the abundant life and a home in heaven. If you need this morning the prayers and the strength of God's family, that there's nothing better than to have a group of people who genuinely care about you and who'll pray for you. If you need to come this morning, we invite you to come as we stand and sing.